everyone. I'm Natalie Gochner. This is Both Sides of the Aisle. I represent the political center and have on the political left, Shireen Gourbani.
Hello and hi, listeners. How you doing?
And on the political right, election week, John Dougal.
Hey, great to be with you. And some of our listeners probably aren't doing so well.
We're going to have a high energy, really interesting conversation about the elections. We're taping this on Wednesday, the day after the presidential elections. Something was in the water, Shireen, that turned this country red. Our former president gets a big victory. You could even say a mandate, Shireen.
You could, yeah. I have to say, it's a little early for me to really understand. I haven't had a sense to like go and look at. My understanding is in some areas voter turnout was low, in other areas it was quite high. So like the kind of national picture is a little bit lost on me, but I hope that we get into that next week. But I will say at a sort of base level, what I can tell you is really sticking with me at this moment is that this country is largely fully comfortable with a traitor leading this country, a person who has said they do not care about the Constitution. And honestly, what I hope is that the harm to everyday Utahns is minimized. That's what I hope.
Okay. Well, so, John, let's bring you in. But as we do that, was this a good day or a bad day for our country, do you think?
I think every presidential election is a mixed day for this country. There's some good, there's some bad that goes into it. It's the nature of the beast. I'm going to say that I don't think most American voters are as philosophical as as perhaps Shireen and I are. And so therefore...
And Natalie,
yes. But you look at this and say, why would so many folks, from Shireen's perspective, why would they cast this vote given those type of concerns?
Yeah.
And I would say I think most of them were looking at a couple issues. They were looking at the economy. You know, the price of gas, the price of food, all that stuff weighed heavily on them. Two, immigration and the chaos at the border weighed heavily on them.
That's the big lesson learned, I think, of the Biden administration is that they did a bad job there and they've paid a price.
And then I think the third factor dealt with foreign wars. Whether it was luck or skill, we didn't really have these wars when Trump was president the last time. And so therefore, I think for a lot, they were looking back at that. And so I think
I hope he's ready for the next 4 years because it's not evident to me that anything's going to get any better on the geopolitical front.
No, it looks very problematic.
Yeah.
That's for sure.
Yeah.
But I think it was more the pocketbook kind of issues that I think they were voting on and not that.
Yeah.
And I think Kamala Harris, you know, made a major mistake. You know, I saw some quote that she made, you know, what would you do different than Biden? Nothing. It's basically, I'm going to do the same. And I get that you're the vice president, but you got to create some separation to
especially
say
when he had low favorability.
He had low favorability. Exactly.
Hey, from a political middle, I mean, I can take this so many different directions, but I am thinking there's a couple things I like for Utah that could be helpful to our public lands dilemma, could be helpful to energy development and some things like that. But when I think of rule of law, free press, retribution, normalizing sexual misconduct, when I think about name-calling indignation, when I think about character at the top, when I think about the people of Ukraine, all those trouble me.
Yeah,
all those trouble me. And so, you know, I'm just one of those that will keep an open mind and kind of walk through this. But my goodness, if we can take a second, this is an absolute cultural realignment in my estimation. Where conservatism, I'm looking at John on this one, is nowhere to be found. Limited government,
traditional limited government, fiscal responsibility, all that type of stuff largely seems to be out
free
the window.
Free markets, globalization.
Yep, out the window, out the window. What you have, and I would describe from my perspective, in the late 60s to early 80s, you saw Southern Democrats flee the Democratic Party and come to the Republican Party over various issues, you know. Abortion, drugs, so forth.
Race.
Race was another factor, yeah. And so then you look right now and say, what's going on?
Yeah.
I see, if you will, the forgotten men and women, the blue-collar class who used to be heavily aligned with the Democrats saying, you know, they're looking down their nose at us and they've been left behind and so looking for another place to go. And Trump's message resonated with them. And so, yeah, it's a major realignment of the Republican Party.
I'll just add, though, that for me, and I think this is touching into what you're saying, working the everyday issues of working class folks are not on the agenda for the Trump administration. And I fully understand that people did not feel that that was what the Democrats were offering either. And I'm feeling that way, too. Right. When we talk about issues like, I know that you have strong feelings about this, but expanding access to public transit, when we think about food programs that help kids finish the school day with a clear head and a full belly, when we think about an education, functional education system that produces the kind of talent and minds that we need to meet the economic demands that this country has, or even the military demands that this country has. We have the vast majority of young people in this country do not qualify for military service with our military because they have a criminal record, because they are overweight, or because they cannot read at a sixth grade level. These are fundamental core problems. And I don't actually see a bold agenda that's been well communicated to folks that helps them come into that and really understand, yeah, there are real consequences on the line here, but we have now just put, you know, we're talking about this realignment, but we've put a person back in the White House whose top and one of few real accomplishments was tax cuts to billionaires. So there's just this huge information gap. And I do think there's a huge sort of perceptual gap. And I think there's a delivery gap.
So philosophically, Shireen and John, I think of globalization, technological advancements, a pandemic, you know, regional wars, bounty and spread, this notion that, you know, some people are, the economy is working for some but not others. I think all of those forces have created upheaval.
Yeah.
Social, political, economic upheaval.
Yeah. I think the racial reckoning that we started to have a few years ago, that we did a full...
Well, I mean, it's in some ways, when do things start? I don't know. But in some ways, you have, you know, the Tea Party movement, Occupy Wall Street. You have in the racial side, the George Floyd. You have populism the minute the former president comes down that escalator and is so successful in running for president. We've talked about decline in institutions, geopolitical conflict. But this is upheaval. That's what creates a red wave, by the way, is something that... You know,
or a red wave or a blue wave.
Or a blue wave, exactly.
Yeah, depending on what's going on. But
and
yes.
Underlying it all, in my judgment, is fear, anxiety, people feeling powerless, unmoored, isolated. These are not great things.
No.
Yeah, well, concerned about being able to make ends meet, food on the table,
economic insecurity.
Which, just to make
the point, absolute economic paradox going on. The economy in the United States of America is the envy of the world right now. Low unemployment, high job growth, high GDP growth, stock market doing great.
Gas prices are not too high.
Yeah, and wages have caught up and now surpassed inflation. It was an okay economy, but people didn't know it.
Yeah.
Why don't you think they knew it? I mean, you call out all those different factors.
Yeah,
and yet when they sit down at their kitchen table.
Failure of communications from the Democrats is one. I think they should have defended their economic record better. But I learned something really interesting. When we talk about unemployment, a high unemployment would be like 7%. You'd still have 93% of your population employed. Inflation, 100%. Hits everybody.
Yeah.
And that was a real lesson to me as an economist, how much inflation gets under people's skin, even though so the prices will never return to what they were, by the way. The price level's permanently higher, but our wages are permanently higher, too. We've reset.
Yes, but we see the price of the grocery store more than we see our wages.
Yep.
I have to say, I read something interesting just yesterday, and Natalie, you can probably back me up on this, but I saw that for the average age of home buyers in the United States jumped dramatically. The average age of first-time home buyers is also up now to 38, I want to say, 38 years old. And the reason, right, we have supply and demand and we have just like exploding costs related to that for housing. So I think there is this other component of it, too, where people feel unmoored in a really physical sense. Rent is expensive. It's hard to find places that are desirable. Yeah. It's hard to break into housing, which is often a stabilizing force in terms of building
inflation and housing.
Wealth. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think those are real.
Hey, so this is the first time we've had a convicted felon, you know, win a presidential election. He's the oldest candidate. He also appears he's winning the popular vote.
for now. I think, yeah, I mean, we'll see how that pans out.
If that stays.
California's very slow.
These are some unusual dynamics.
Unusual dynamics. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess I just also have to say the felon line has always has bothered me because I have dear friends who have felonies on their records. And the difference between them and Donald Trump is that they did their time. There was a consequence for their behavior, and they experienced that with jail time and many other restrictions. That is not what Donald Trump has.
John, we need to talk about the Senate and the House, but I just want to read you a quote. The president-elect last night, he said, "Many people have told me that God spared my life for a reason, and that reason was to save our country and restore America to greatness." He's declared God is his advocate there. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that trouble you at all?
Yeah, yes, but, you know, folks have been saying that since the attempted assassination. And I mean, I'm reminded of the quote of Abraham Lincoln, "I'm not worried about whether God's on my side. I need to worry about whether I'm on God's side."
Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's very well.
There's a certain element of humility in that comment.
Yeah, very well said.
But I do believe that he believes his agenda is to restore greatness in America. Now, I come from the perspective where I believe greatness comes from Americans, everyday Americans, and not from their government. But
and I think
I hope he unleashes
comes from the character of a leader, which I'm really suspect about in this case.
I just also want to touch on another word that you said, which was around isolation. Mm-hmm. I think that people will feel the urge to, as folks on my side, maybe, and also folks that I think maybe are feeling in the middle, a little confused, even people who may have cast votes for Trump, may feel an urge to isolate. Mm-hmm. And I would just encourage that in this time, community care is going to be critically important. Find that organization that you care about, get involved, volunteer, build community in your neighborhoods, build communion with others. You know, I'm not a church going person, but I would suggest that you may find solace in religious community if that's something for you. I think this is not a time to isolate. I think this is a time to be together.
Yeah. Very well said.
Can I piggyback on that?
Go for it, John.
I would also say that rather than thinking that your neighbor who voted the other way hates you, think about what kind of message should we get in terms of what is their concern? What is causing them to vote this way, and then try and find, like you said, some common ground in that as well. Because there's lots of those same issues that they share. They just see different ways to go about trying to fix that insecurity or that concern.
I love the expressions. Hey, let's take a short break, and then we better talk about the House, the Senate, and local races. I'm Natalie Gochner with Shireen Gourbani and John Dougal. Stay tuned.
You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle on Utah Public Radio. We love to hear from listeners like you. If you would like to send us a comment, email bsotapodcast@gmail.com. That's bsotapodcast@gmail.com. Thanks for listening. Shireen Gourbani on the left.
John Dougal on the right.
Natalie Gochner in the Political Center. This is Both Sides of the Aisle. It's a special election week podcast here, and we're talking about the presidential elections just ended this week. Both Shireen and John gave a little bit of advice at the end of our first segment, and I didn't. And in the political middle, I still deserve a voice. I just want to encourage our listeners.
Yes,
please. I want to give advice, just like John and Shireen gave at the last segment, about how you handle difficult elections. And I've been adopting a strategy that talks about basically your bright center. And your bright center is the things you control. You're at the center of it, what you value, what you believe. And just stay there. Just be seated there. And then illuminate outward to your friends, to your family, to your community. It's similar to what you shared, Shireen. And in doing that, you're actually mastering what you do control and not feeling so violated by what you don't control. So go to your inner core, the bright center, and move from there. All right, you guys, the Senate goes Republican as well.
Boom.
I got to say, though, this was always a tough map.
Uh-huh. It was expected.
For the Democrats.
And I don't want to, I'm sad about John Tester. That state has been trending, Montana's been trending Republican. So that made sense to me. I think we have a couple that are still kind of TBD. West Virginia was going to go. It just was a tough year. I would say the one that feels like the biggest loss to me is Sherrod Brown, who I think is
in Ohio.
Ohio, yeah. A really effective senator, a real champion for the working class, and basically is being replaced by a Trump-endorsed millionaire. So maybe
Bernie Moreno wins that one.
Yeah.
Tim Sheehy beats John Tester, and Jim Justice, the governor.
fills the vacancy.
Of West Virginia, yeah.
Yeah.
Gets the Joe Manchin spot.
But your luck. I mean, Trump with, if you will, that mandate, and then Republicans taking the Senate.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's an interesting message.
I thought Ted Cruz was vulnerable. It turns out he wasn't.
No,
53-45.
It is moving. I actually don't think, we'll see what the final numbers are. I don't think that's as good as Better O'Rourke did, if I'm not mistaken. Uh-huh. There's just a ton of opportunity in places like Texas and honestly in places like Utah, where there are a lot of unregistered eligible voters. Mm-hmm. We talk about our voter turnout in the state, which is good, but there are a lot of votes left on the table because there are a bunch of people who've disengaged from this process.
Mm. I'm going to just point out, with all this, I think we've got a bunch of Americans that are upset. They're mad. You know, they went Trump one time. They flipped to Biden. They flipped back. They're just
interesting.
They're upset about everything that's going on.
Not so much
just
partisan.
Trying to figure out.
Yeah.
I don't think they're as partisan. It's just trying to figure out something that from their perspective works, and the same thing in the Senate.
That would follow my thinking about this upheaval, this realignment that, you know, it's not like a given where you land. You're just anxious.
I know that we don't have time to talk about the complexity of international conflicts, but I can tell you that for a lot of Democrats, the rhetoric, or a lot of people who typically vote on the left, the rhetoric from Democrats at the national level around what is happening in Gaza and the unwillingness to name it had left, again, a lot of people feeling like they simply could not vote for a party that didn't seem to have a moral center.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Let's do it really quickly. It looks like the House, we don't know where that's going to go yet, right?
Yeah.
So
we'll
save
be back
that
next
for
week.
Next week. Shereen?
I think regardless, we're probably going to agree that it's going to be really close. Whichever way it goes, it's going to only be a couple
a vote
of votes.
Or two.
Yeah. And it will beg the question, you know, is this going to be easier for Trump to get his agenda done? It probably is. What will happen to the filibuster? So some really interesting dynamics in the next year.
Maybe we should bring our predictions next week.
Well, I'm going to say Trump, you know, last time when he got elected, I think he was surprised and he wasn't prepared.
Uh-huh.
This time, I think he's going to move really quickly to start implementing his agenda.
Yeah. Which is Project 2025, to be clear.
John. I don't know to what extent he's actually read that, but he's also, the interesting thing is, last time he was in, they would describe that there were, quote unquote, adults in the room surrounding him to help guide his decisions. And I think guardrails are off, and he's not interested in that.
And the American public knew
that. He's
going
to look for those that are going to be loyal to him. And they knew that when they voted for him.
Yeah.
And how about class act Liz Cheney doing what she did?
Yeah. Talk about it. I know you're a fan, so go ahead.
Well, she just essentially said, listen, the American people have spoken, and it's our duty to support this president. And this is someone who has no love lost for Donald Trump.
To be clear, Kamala Harris also called to concede, which is something Donald Trump never did and would never do.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So these are real questions of character.
Absolutely.
And what is going to happen to our democracy?
Shereen, abortion was front and center in many, many states and some
many
really
states.
Interesting things that are being overshadowed by all this other, you know, red wave. But tell us the details.
So abortion was on the ballot in 10 states, in some cases, blue states that were securing the right in their constitution. I don't think we fully have all of the numbers, but I can tell you certainly Colorado, Arizona, Montana, Maryland. I don't know if I can get them all, but 7 states affirmed abortion.
New York, Missouri
affirmed abortion access. Nebraska did not. Nebraska also had 2 competing ballot initiatives around abortion, one that was restriction and one that was codifying rights. It's very confusing for voters. It underfunded. South Dakota, as a North Dakotan, it's my duty to hate that state, so I'm not surprised that they did not enshrine abortion rights.
Wow.
But I have to I want Utahns to listen closely to this. 57% of the voters in Florida voted to secure abortion access in that state. 57%. You would think that's a win.
Mm-hmm.
It is not, because the Florida legislature, just like I think you should be watching closely the Utah legislature, the Florida legislature decided to move the goalpost from 50% plus one to 60% for a supermajority on ballot initiatives. Have no doubt that playbook will be replicated here. I just think that you should really, voters should be, people in the state should really be paying close attention to that, because a minority of voters in Florida are now restricting access to folks, and it's creating havoc and people are dying.
Yeah. Okay. Well, so let's go local. Let's go to the governor's race. Spencer Cox running against Brian King, Phil Lyman, Robert Latham. Interestingly, Lyman got, and you know, some numbers can still change, whatever, but Lyman got 6.3%. That's not a lot.
No,
relative to how much bark there was.
You're hearing the dynamic anywhere from 4 to 15%, and so I figured it would come in somewhere just shy of 10%. So yeah.
Yeah. So if it came in at 15 and you had Brian King at 30, then you start to get pretty interesting. Mm-hmm. But Spencer mm-hmm. Cox wins handily. Yeah.
And I would say some of the Democrats overperformed versus past years by slightly.
Derrick Brown gets 58% plus, beating Rudy Batusta and Michelle Quist and others. Well, that's a big victory for Derrick.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think it also shows the independent strategy when you have a Democrat in the race is not working.
Mm-hmm. Meaning the third party can't win when the Democrat's in.
No.
Yes. You're correct.
Or vice versa. Yeah. There are some mm-hmm. races where I think Democrats could have taken a bigger bite, but we had an independent in the race.
Marlo Oaks gets the win at 64%. That's a strong win. Tina Cannon in at 63%, Republican state auditor. Someone you know well, John.
She'll be replacing me. The interesting thing with Tina is she is the first Republican woman to be elected on an independent ticket in Utah. For
congratulations
first
to
female
Tina.
State auditor.
Republican, and, but independently. Yeah, independent as in lieutenant governor or, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Jan Graham was
for
on
Democrats.
Her own
yep.
for Democrats, and Olene Walker and Deidre Henderson were on the governor's ticket.
Yes.
So when you talk independent ticket.
Good job, Tina. In the U.S. House, Blake Moore beats Bill Campbell very, you know, significantly. Celeste Malloy wins. Michael Kennedy, next congressman from CD3. Congrats to, mm-hmm. I call him congrats. Senator Kennedy, but congrats to him.
Yep.
And then my congressman, Burgess Owens, gets a 62%. There's a theme here, Shireen and John, that...
And John Curtis.
And John Curtis for Senate. But there's a theme here that it's usually 60-40 or 70-30.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but the R's are consistently getting 60 to 70% in this state.
Yeah, I usually call it 63 to 68%, depending on the year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, or depending on how dutifully you drew the districts to meet your needs. So I just want to say that is an interesting part of this because the anti-gerrymandering case.
I'll just note that when it comes to statewide, you don't really draw the state.
No, but when you do have fair districts, I mean, when we have a shot at fair districts, we win, right? We do. Like mm-hmm. there are many that are close that often tip our direction when they're fair.
Looked at a lot of the legislative races.
Some interesting ones.
Yeah. And then we don't have them in front of us, but
state school board.
Senator Reby looks like she's going to get that.
Yeah.
I was watching state school board. There's some interesting races there and, you know. What's going to shake out? There's one that's really close. You've got Molly Hart down there, just I think about 2,000 votes shy. I mean, she's ahead, but it's
close.
Ahead by just less than 2,000 votes.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see how things shake out on the school
All
board.
All right, John and Shireen. So then we have Utah County Clerk Aaron Davidson. This is a clerk who encouraged
and we talked
people
about last
to come in.
Well, he hates vote by mail and he wants people to vote in person. And then people showed up, and I live in Utah County. I didn't show up there. I mean, I cast it, you know, early, but folks were standing in line for hours is what I heard because they ran out of ink and there were more people showing up in person than they expected, even though they've been pushing people to turn out in person.
You got a lack of ink. You got long lines. It delays the release of statewide results by, you know, two and a half hours. That's a mess.
And watch voters in Utah County return a Republican to that seat again next time it's up. Like, this is the frustration that I have. When you see that things are going poorly, why are we unable to make a course correction and think outside of party lines?
But the person before him did a great job.
Did a good job.
Who is also a Republican.
I like that Aaron Davidson did say to the Tribune that I'm going to get crucified on this, but we just followed the process. That's why there are emergency ballots. But he recognized that he... caused some trouble.
You weren't well prepared. I'm going to just throw in Alpine School District is going to split three ways. So, you know, I was in favor of the split. And so that was good to see. It was 62% or so on the west side, and it's 58% and change where I live on the what they call the central part, but northeastern part of Utah County.
And you will get to continue to enjoy our zoo arts and parks because ZAP is looking strong for Salt Lake County and will be supported going forward. I think it's a 10-year commitment to fund our zoo arts and parks, the ZAP tax.
Is that a promise or a threat?
I know. It's in this case, it's a promise.
What about the Salt Lake County bond?
The Salt Lake County bond
is the criminal justice
public
reform.
Safety is tight, and it looks like it may go down. I think that this is a kind of fundamental question around how we would like our dollars spent when it comes to criminal justice or the justice system broadly. And I think a lot of people saw, okay, we're talking about solutions for homelessness, But what we're really doing is creating more opportunities for incarceration. Is that the solution that we want to see? So I'm proud that Salt Lake County voters looked carefully at that and maybe decided they were interested in something else.
We had two constitutional amendments, B, that was the school fund cap, and then C, which was the elections for sheriffs, both passing with large majorities. Makes you wonder what would have happened with Amendment A and D had they stayed, had they been able to be counted.
Mm-hmm. I will also say, though, there was no organized opposition really to either of those. Yeah. So that's important, too.
Yeah. Well, that's the end of our program. Just one quick, just each of you, a reaction to the 2024 presidential election. One word, Shireen.
I guess I would just say hope.
Okay. John?
One word. Reach out to your neighbor.
Yeah, that's fair.
Not one word.
Yeah. And I'm going to go with listen. Okay, great show, everyone. Shireen Gurbani, John Dougal, Natalie Gochner. Programs produced by Anthony Scoma. Thanks for listening.